Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like pro wrestling? Well, we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, the Royal Rumble goes international in the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Meh. At Invader Club, Chris has selected Nick Bockwinkel versus Bruiser Brody from August 31st, 1979. We are back from our end of the year hiatus. This is Shake Them Rubs. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. It has been a week here in Los Angeles, California, Chris.
Yeah, no joke. And both of us are on the IR and still making the appearance here. I guess you can go first.
Oh, let me talk about this. The Santa Ana winds have blown up and decided to start spreading fires and whatnot. And I had to go to the doctor's office throughout all this. So that was a lot of fun. Went to get my 6-month cystoscopy. As you might recall, I had to go to the emergency room last time this happened, so Jeff was a little reticent to happen, but I thought I had had my condition, it had come to light, and everything was good, and then I got in there, and they said, you say you're allergic to sulfa drugs, but we never gave you a sulfa drug last time. We only gave you an antibody, and we gave you 200 milligram antibody called... Calca, something like that, and then a UTI drug called Peridium, which I got 200 milligrams of, two small 100 milligram pills. Okay, so we're not going to give you the antibody this time. So I go back in, I get my cystoscopy. The news is not good. My cancer is back. This time, better than ever. So I think there's more than one tumor. Well, there's one tumor and there's one. We'll just burn that off while we're in there this time too, type of a thing. It's early, but it's still, it's something I don't want to do. It's something I thought I'd be done with after, you know, this time, since it's recurrent, I may have to go through chemotherapy. You know, it's not fun. And so I get back and, they've decided to give me no medication this time, but to keep an eye on infection. And then they go, well, we'll just won't give you the antibody. We'll give you the Peridium instead. We'll keep you around for a little bit. I said, all right, fine. So I take the 2 Peridium. I'm there. I sip the water. Doing okay. Not really feeling anything weird. Okay, I'm cool, whatever. This time I got a ride instead of I usually drive myself, but they said this last time, no, you should get somebody, and they didn't hold me to it, which was wrong, but I get in the car for the ride home after a person gets there, and I start to itch. And I'll tell you about this in a moment, last time this happened, not only did my blood pressure precipitously drop, but I got all sort of hives, and my skin started to burn. So I was just hoping, well, maybe this is just after I, you know, I've changed my clothes and whatnot. I get home, I start to heat up a little bit, and I'm like, oh no, here it comes. So I call my ride back, I go, I need you to come here and pick me up, and I need you to keep an eye on me for a little bit. And I call the clinic and I go, it's the peridium. What should I do? Take some Benadryl and hope for the best. It's like, okay, great. Sorry. Oh, we didn't look up any of the symptoms for what a peridium allergy might be after having it for 3 times. Great. So I go, I don't want to go to the ER. Let's try and go to a urgent care. But I had brought my EpiPen with me just in case it was going to be bad, you know. And so we get to my friend's house, and I'm turning red. And there's a handyman going, you don't look well. So we go to the urgent care. We only have one provider here. It's going to be a 45-minute wait. They're just going to tell you to go to the ER. Nope, I'm going to another urgent care. So I go to this place, check in. Let's take your blood pressure. Boom, I'm out. I'm starting to fade. They decide to give me the EpiPen, which I brought, which they'll probably charge me for. And they call an ambulance to take me 3 blocks down the road. So once again, another $4,000, $5,000 ride of under a quarter of a mile for me. And you also have to remember that this is in the middle of fire season right now happening. So I'm in an emergency room that is packed with a lot of very tired firefighters just sitting there waiting to, you know, have more Benadryl and some steroids and stuff and get this all through my system, and watching my heart and making sure it doesn't do that, and just being very alone in an ER. And all week now I've had to answer questions about how I'm doing. And it's hard because I have to parse whether or not they're talking about the fire, which I'm fine. I am miles away from any fire, barring any crazy homeless person. Because we're having homeless people starting fires around town now to see what'll happen. Or the health. So I don't really want to talk about it online all that much in terms of that, because it's like, I have people I know who are losing everything they own. But it's like, oh yeah, not going to get any sympathy for the cancer this week if I say anything about it. So it's just been tough. I mean, I had a really bad mental health day yesterday because it's just, this is not fun. And there's nothing more lonely than being in an ER by yourself. Even though I talked to somebody who goes, yeah, well, you're in the waiting room, you're also by yourself, because they don't get to wait with you in the emergency room. So you're just sitting there, listening to beeps, listening to people groan. I had a rather crazy Eastern European in the place next to me who came over decided to start talking to me. I'm just like, go back. You're mentally ill. Go back. It was a mental illness 5150 pickup. And he's just kind of walking around. He's just like, what the hell has my life become? But yes, it was a tough week. It was a bad week. I have monologued enough about it. Keep me in your prayers, kids. If you are a personal injury attorney, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what I could possibly do, because this clinic and my doctor will definitely be going to arbitration in such cases. But if you work on contingency, give me a call and let me see if I have a case. Because I'm tired of going and getting random checkups and then ending up having to pay $6,000 extra to go to the emergency room because I have a basic allergy that nobody could diagnose. End rant. How are you doing, Chris?
Well, Jeff, I too have been better. So I've alluded to it on the show a few times in passing, but I don't, especially now that I'm, you know, like half a podcaster or whatever my status is, semi-retired, I don't go on these bigger rants about this. But for those of you who aren't familiar or like don't catch every episode of Shake Them Ropes, and I certainly haven't talked about this on every episode, last year I was working at the tram, and while I was working there, I had a manager shift supervisor who was responsible for the safety of everybody going up and down the tram. And I had went to that supervisor and had complained that I was having issues during the shift with my ears. And this is not uncommon, going up and down the 5,000 plus feet that the tram takes you results in pressurization changes in the ears. And I was experiencing some pain. That manager made a irresponsible, in my decision, in the decision or in the opinion of others as well, decision to continue to let me work to the point where my right side eardrum collapsed in on itself for the better part of a month, necessitating surgery in both of my ears. And that happened about 6 months ago. Since then, I have had kind of a sustaining pattern of hearing issues and an inconsistency with my hearing. After the surgery, my hearing has mostly been good, but since Thanksgiving, I have been battling ear infections, first on my right side, and now I believe it has shifted to my right or to my left side. In perpetuity here, this one ear infection subsided and then turned into a chronic, more benign condition known as serosotitis media, also known as glue ear, which is obstructing my hearing and just causing tons of congestion. I am, for those of you who have your suggestions, trust me, I know everything you possibly could know about decongesting my nose and sinuses at this point. I'm quite gifted at it. It's just, I can't seem to shake this. Whatever happened with the injury last year seems to be still having residual impacts on me. And that you're mentioning mental health, this has had a pretty negative impact on my mental health because it's been going on for weeks now. Music has been inconsistent. There have been when it was on my right side here, you know, like about a month of basically not listening to music and really not playing music outside of lessons, and even that has been more muddling through. So the things that I enjoy in life have been kind of ripped away from me for a sustaining period of time. And I'm not really sure when this is going to resolve. And I'm just hoping that this resolves in a hearing balance that's at least equalized, even if there is more hearing loss than I've already sustained. Normally, for a musician, you lose your hearing from noise and volume. And my life, unfortunately, it has more been the case that I have lost it through repeated infections. So, not a hoot. not the best. I mean, it's not what you're going through, but like to say, it is certainly life impacting. I'm not trying to, you know, compete or have the.
No. It's not a contest. We just wanted to give an update on what was going on.
Yeah, no, but that's what's been going on. I woke up today and I can't really hear out of my left side now.
Well, let's talk a little graps. Rest in
boy,
peace.
You, did you know that wrestling's on Netflix now?
Well, something resembling wrestling is on Netflix. I don't know if I'd call it that. I mean, like I said,
they certainly had a Raw show on Netflix this week.
There was a show on Netflix. There was a show on TBS. There was a pretty decent show on the CW, I thought, this week. But we'll get to that. Attention must be paid. Rest in peace to Black Bart, aka Richard Harris, passing away of cancer at the age of 73. If I say the name Black Bart, do you know who I'm talking about, Chris?
Offhand? I know the name, but I've never actually seen a Black Bart match.
Okay, yeah, you may not have, unless you're like me and you, you know, he was kind of a mid-card enhancement talent to the stars. He's kind of what you like to call a character jobber, to be kind of a little bit derivative.
You're like Wahoo McDaniel type.
No. Wahoo far more up the ladder. Than Black Bart was. 6 foot two, 260. So he stood out quite a bit. Had a tag team in Florida in the Mid-Atlantic with Ron Bass called the Long Riders. Appeared on a Starrcade 85, had a bull rope match against J.J. Dillon and outlaw Ron Bass during that time. Did a couple tours of Japan with Hanson and Brody and Manny Fernandez, where he'd be the guy to take the fall. He'd get chances here and there, either as a babyface or a heel, and would hold some mid-card titles like the national title for Crockett and also the Mid-Atlantic title, which he would lose to Ron Garvin. He'd beat guys like Sam Houston for it. You'd have a lot of those things. Did have a chance to be a world champion once in 1986 in World Class Championship Wrestling. After they withdrew for the NWA, Bill Watts was trying to take over the North Texas territory, and Chris Adams, who was the world champion at the time, bolted for the would then be renamed the UWF. And Black Bart, who was then given Skandar Akbar as a manager, was made the world champion in a fake match from Los Angeles. He'd kind of go around in the late 80s a little bit too. He'd be in like Global. He was in there in the early 90s. He worked a little bit in New Japan.
Okay, so maybe I have seen Black Bart.
Buzz Sawyer and the Barbarian. Was in World War III in 1995, the three-ring battle royal type of thing, and that was really his big last one. In the early 90s, he kind of became an enhancement talent for the WWF, which may be where you'd see him there. He'd always be taking the falls there because J.J. Dillon loved him, and so J.J. Dillon brought him in. Also, famously, there's a story in The Observer, and I absolutely love this. It's like, on June 20th, 1987, at the Summit in Houston, he was in the tournament to crown the Crockett version of the first Western States Heritage title. I remember this one because Eddie Gilbert had just turned Sting babyface and was telling me how Sting was going to be this huge star with the turn. Now, you won't believe how the crowd reacts to him. No matter what anyone says, the guy who saw Sting as a star first was Eddie Gilbert. I was at the show in Houston for the tournament. Sting came out for his match in the first round of the tournament, and the place went crazy. I was impressed. He worked with Black Bart, and Black Bart pinned him in 7 minutes. the other claim to fame for modern day wrestling fans is he is the man who trained one John Bradshaw Layfield down in Texas when he was breaking in. But yeah, he was one of those cowboy type wrestlers. Sneaky good guillotine leg drop for a guy who was, you know, 350 or so. It was a middle rope leg drop. He called the Texas Trash Compactor. Looked very effective. It wasn't Bobby Eaton. It wasn't Psychosis, and it wasn't X-Pac or you know, any of the high flyer types. But for a big guy to do a leg drop like that, very impressive. And of course, what's the name of the Joshi wrestler? I can't think of it. A Bull Nakano doing the leg drop off the top of the cage. But, you know, it would still, you know, you'd watch and you go, ooh, that looks at least bad. But yeah, rest in peace to one Black Bart. No matches really of note, but maybe take a look at that 1985 bull rope match if it's available streaming, if Starrcade 85 is somewhere around there.
Also, the Wikipedia of the original Black Bart is a hoot to read about as well. Did you know about the original Black Bart?
The outlaw Black Bart?
Yes, he is known as the Gentleman Bandit. He was known for leaving written couplets at the scenes of his crimes, a couple of which are, "Here I lay me down to sleep, to wait the coming morrow. Perhaps success, perhaps defeat, and everlasting sorrow. Let come what will, I'll try it on. My condition can't be worse. And if there's money in that box, 'tis money in my purse."
Yeah, my Black Bart didn't write poetry, so.
I wish that this Black Bart
had.
Yes, no, I mean, you don't want to sound like Lanny Poffo. You don't want to go to the Lanny Poffo zone here.
I bet you there's a match between Black Bart and Lanny Poffo somewhere.
Garbage, like couplets coming out from a big bruising, like brawler beforehand. The like crappy rhymes were like both rhymes end in the word crap or something, you know.
Oba Femi the poet, sure.
Yeah.
Royal Rumble 2026, reported first by PW Insider, will be in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia had said that they might go over $55 million for one of the prestige events, and it is thought that if this Royal Rumble goes swimmingly in the Middle East, that there might be a WrestleMania in the future there, Chris. Well, now, here's my question. Will CM Punk be in Royal Rumble 2026?
Yeah, you know, moments like that make me think it's really good that Hulk Hogan got booed for 30 seconds this week on live television.
I actually have that in the news, but I mean, it could be either. Well, let's do it now. Variety. 2 minutes after that Hulk Hogan segment had a story about how Hulk Hogan got booed on Netflix, Chris. That was somewhat amazing, yet not surprising given Hulk Hogan's visibility during the presidential campaign. They're not as forgiving in Los Angeles as they might be elsewhere.
I don't think it's merely his visibility. Yeah, right.
I know it's not.
And actually, I think that like the canard is to go, oh, brother, they're after me because of my politics.
No. I was not implying that at all.
No. I wasn't saying that either. But okay. I've definitely heard like Hogan defenders or people who are trying to put a little bit of a spin on it that, to like bias towards Hogan basically try to write this off as, oh, it's political.
No.
I don't think so either. I think it's an aggregation of all the years of bad equity. It's everything from, you know, the Gawker lawsuit, Bubba the Love Sponge stuff, the like there. If you go on YouTube now,
the N-word stuff is really the big stuff.
The N-word stuff, but like not just that. If you go on YouTube now, you can find 2 hour plus videos of Hulk Hogan lies. Like Hulk Hogan and lying are synonymous with one another. And I think there's just something about this guy, and this has something in a world that is entirely fake. It's professional wrestling. There's something about this guy that is repulsively fake to people.
Yes.
That the fakeness about him induces repulsion. It's, you know, it's
to
not
a certain sect of fans. Now, here's the thinking here, and it was very cynical, I think, on WWE's part, because there have been some wrestling venues where the reaction was far less volatile. I mean, there were boos, but you could hear others who cheered them. But the reaction he got from people who don't know any better, which was the Republican convention. Because, like, I was listening to people, you know, talk about afterwards and, you know, really comparing, you know, they just kind of went on the surface of comparing politics to pro wrestling and all that other stuff. They don't really know anything about the Hulk Hogan stuff, per se. So if they were moderately entertained or they're like, well, it's a stunt or whatever, they never really went into the things that Hulk Hogan did.
Right, yeah, I was going to say that it sort of breaks with the Republicans, right? It sort of breaks into a perfect storm, I would say, of one, things that are pretty damnable about Hulk Hogan, like just everything that he said about, you know, cancer patients and Andre the Giant and just the fabulations around all of his life and the fact that he routinely lies and self-aggrandizes. That stuff just wouldn't be on the register. There's the other stuff about the hard R that maybe doesn't necessarily trigger offense for some people.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, they don't use it, but they're not necessarily going to write someone off because of it. I'll put it that way. And then there's like the Bubba the Love Sponge stuff and the Gawker stuff, and they don't really care too much about that stuff either. I think that might be the last place he still can gain traction, but even if you take some of those, they have to be essentially Republican non-wrestling fans.
I think non-wrestling fan is
the most important part, right? Yeah,
not but non-wrestling fan.
What I'm saying is, I think that if you have someone who is a solid wrestling fan and is also Republican or conservative leaning, I think their knowledge and revulsion towards Hulk Hogan overrides whatever politics. Yes. My God, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt.
All right. It didn't sound like it at first when you're saying, well, you know, those people, they probably don't mind the hard.
Well, I can't say the best about them. Look at their nominee, Jeff, but I can at least say some things.
You know, and I think
they went for the Stormy Daniels guy.
Hold on. I'm trying to get it away from the political part right now and trying to view WWE cynicism here, which is more like, well, he got praise and a pop and people were entertained there. Maybe we can now bring him back to help, because the whole point of this is to try and help market the Saturday Night's Main Event brand, of which Hogan is synonymous. So I think it's a disastrous move.
No, disastrous move.
Was he on this last one? I can't remember. I don't think he was. I don't think
he wasn't.
I mean, that's
the other thing is like they brought back Jesse.
Yes.
And I thought that was fine. But I mean, there's just simply no clamoring for Hogan. I do not think that there is clamoring for Hogan.
There's not clamoring for Hogan, but there's
And I don't think there's this sense of absence without him either.
No, but it's weird. It's like, well, the WWE brand is so synonymous with Hulk Hogan that there's almost like this siren song that this company has where it's like, well, we need to bring him back because he was so instrumental to him, you know, even more so than, say, a Bret Hart or anybody in the Attitude Era. Hulk Hogan in the 80s with the growth, with the national expansion, was WWF. So they're going to put that toe in the water every so often. And
I think they are, but they
need to get burned on the stove, you know.
Yes, they need to get burned on the stove, and I also think that mythos is fundamentally flawed. I think Steve Austin and Dwayne Johnson were far more important champions for the growth of this company because they allowed WWF to turn into WWE and truly become the publicly traded company that we've come to know and not necessarily always love on a regular basis. I do think that Hogan was extremely important to the original expansion of WWE, but I don't think that he alone is the story.
I think the time for Hogan nostalgia has passed. I think that's what and God knows that I think the time for, we'll get into this in the Lazy River. I think the time for the Attitude Era nostalgia has long past too. We are now like three generations away from both of those, and it's just,
yeah. And I would just think, as you're going through the material, looking at the material and thinking about all these characters, the only one that's like the least problematic of all of them, I'm receiving a message from my assistant here. Yes, I will be able to. Thank you very much for that. He was giving me just a few pointers here on the Austin Rock factoids here that I was trying to get in place.
Finish your thought.
Yes. So I don't think he's that.
Who's
relevant.
The least problematic?
I'm sorry. The least problematic of the Attitude Era stars. Thank you, Austin. I would say
I love people saying that because
it's true, but he's not necessarily super salvageable.
We have forgiven him of a lot of crap.
I agree. He stuns women on a regular basis
in real life. I mean,
I know it's weird how he's gotten exonerated.
The domestic abuse thing still lingers for me, and I just can't believe nobody ever brings it up. Anytime he comes back, well, it's great to see him with the alcoholic abuser character on camera.
Yes, right. Like the guy who doesn't give a shit about society's rules, including with like how it governs intergender sorts of things. Yeah.
I
know. It's not necessarily super comfortable, but compared to Dwayne Johnson, who is doing sexist stuff on a regular basis, homophobic stuff on a regular basis in this Rock character. And then like the Nation of Domination's pretty problematic, especially in a post Trayvon Martin world.
You're doing all kayfabe stuff. I'm thinking people's actual off-screen character choices.
You're saying the Attitude Era.
That's
so
true.
I'm talking about the characters from the Attitude
Era.
Gotcha. And then obviously Degeneration X. I think we've talked about this on and off air countless times. Basically, flush all of that catalog down the toilet and pretend it never happened would be the best move.
See, I thought you were going to
go down
the road.
Beyond Mick Foley and Chainsaw Charlie going off the edge by the New Age Outlaws was total shit.
See, I thought you were going to go down the road of, well, you know, Kane isn't exactly Mr. Popular these days, and The Undertaker's been saying some things on podcasts and whatnot. Okay.
Oh, yes. Cool. No. Kane and The Undertaker's takes on the world also suck, but that's not the only problem here.
No, that's fine.
From the Attitude Era, I guess giving The Undertaker the benefit of the doubt, crucifying Austin's one of the least problematic.
well, for some people it is. For those of us who are somewhat religious, maybe not, but yeah.
I see a lot of parallels, but
do you? Okay.
I'll flush them out off the air for the Patreon.
Please don't. Triple H on Pat McAfee shows at SmackDown going back to 2 hours. Date not announced. Grand opening, grand closing. I don't have anything else to say.
Well, like, let me tell you, SmackDown, I tried. Holy shit, was this a piece of shit. That is my two-sentence review of SmackDown.
We're going to be putting the explicit language thing on here.
I don't know how to explain like what that...
Oh, okay, let's wait till the major room because it's watering it down
a whole bunch of crap with tomato sauce, and that was SmackDown.
Vince McMahon, former CEO of WWE, agreed to pay over $1.7 million to settle SEC charges that he signed to undisclosed settlement arrangements by passing WWE's internal accounting controls and causing inaccuracies in the company's 2018 and 2021 financial statements.
I'm excited that he's finally got this Stormy Daniels stuff behind him.
The settlement includes a $400,000 fine and a $1.33 million reimbursement to WWE. McMahon did not admit wrongdoing as part of the settlement and then came out with this statement via Twitter/X. The case is closed. Today ends nearly 3 years of investigation by different governmental agencies. There has been a great deal of speculation about what exactly the government was investigating and what the outcome would be. As today's resolution shows, much of that speculation was misguided and misleading. Hawkins editorial, false. In the end, there was never anything more to this than minor accounting errors with regard to some personal payments that I made several years ago while I was CEO of WWE. I'm thrilled that I can now put all this behind me. Put on your earmuffs, kids, because F off. No, I won't cuss, but my God. This is the same kind of statement. Look, I was involved in an SEC case last year. I think I talked about it on here. Those guys got off on a technicality, and then they started tweeting all, but, well, see, we were found not guilty, and oh, see, God saw us through. It's no, you got off because a judge said that when you were pumping stocks and then selling into the people who were buying them, because you weren't directly selling into them, that wasn't really fraud, which is also false and a gross misinterpretation of the rules. This is Vince McMahon. See, I didn't admit wrongdoing, so there was no wrongdoing.
Right. No, it's very much, I am not receiving a penalty.
Yes.
Ipso facto.
Yes, therefore.
I did not do the thing. And this is the second, I mean, on the, as I made the joke earlier, it's so great that he finally has the Stormy Daniels stuff behind him because it very much echoes this, like his reaction is very much akin to the other person's reaction of this just sort of like petulance, even as they're walking away, that like the whole thing was entirely trumped up or whatever. But like, dude, the money happened. That money expenditure actually
it was an accounting error. No, it was a moral failure for which you had to pay for. That's
right. You did a thing and you used money inappropriately to cover it up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, and he's going to come back with a stupid entertainment company. I hope it fails. I really do.
I do, too. Again, it gave me a little bit of heart this week to see Hulk Hogan get booed for 30 seconds.
He'll probably be the star of McMahon's first production. As seen across platforms, the announcing teams have changed. Raw is now Michael Cole and Pat McAfee with Alicia Taylor as your ring announcer. SmackDown, Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett. Shipped over there with Lillian Garcia being the ring announcer. And Corey Graves moves to NXT to be Vic Joseph's emotional support animal, having to deal with Booker T.
One of my favorite feuds in wrestling is Booker T versus Vic Joseph. And I'm actually very upset that a third man is being inserted into this.
Is it
this.
Booker T versus Vic Joseph? Or is it,
is Booker
Vic
T versus the product?
Fighting
no.
For his life. Yeah,
it's Booker T versus the product.
Maniac.
Yes. And yes, Vic Joseph is defending the product from a rampaging Booker T who doesn't know how to do anything in terms of coherent.
Let me tell you, Vic, it's the energy that's important. It doesn't matter what I say. So I'm going to say a bunch of random stuff and you're going to have to clean it up even if it doesn't make any sense. Oh, yeah.
I will tell you what. my assistant, my production assistant here actually does a stellar Booker T. He does not watch, he is not into wrestling at all, unlike myself, but does have to suffer through me watching wrestling every week and has seen enough NXT now that he does a compelling Booker T. If he resurfaces, I will have this demonstrated
just,
on the
just a run-in? Sure, why
yes,
not?
Yes, I'll have a little run-in appearance of this.
Netflix on Raw did around 5 million. That's a hell of a number for such a show. Let me just get through the rest of this news because I'm just tired of it. WWE has entered into a partnership with technology entertainment company COSM to present premium live events in shared reality. It was announced today that WWE and COSM have reached a multi-year partnership that will see WWE PLE shown at COSM locations. Starting with the Royal Rumble, fans can buy tickets and attend these facilities to watch PLEs with a ringside experience on an 87-foot dome screen. Currently has two venues, one in Los Angeles, which I've been to and I'm going to talk about in a moment, and Dallas, with two more being planned for Atlanta and Detroit.
Is this like the OmniMax in Boston?
I don't know what the OmniMax in Boston
is. The OmniMax is like a domed theater thing.
It's very much like that.
You put on these goggles, and it's like you're in...
You know, it's a little bit like the Meta goggles a little bit, but it's far more high grade. It is impressive.
This uses goggles, and the Omni is actually just a dome, and things are just displayed into the dome, and that's what creates the sense of
they've been running Monday Night Football and Sunday Night Football games out here for a while, and you pay, I think it was like $100-$150. You know, you get bougie food. It's a lot like the Alamo Draft House in that respect. And you go in, and it's like having like field cam, but right in front of you and stuff. It's impressive. I'd be interested. I may do this for a wrestling event just to see what it's like. Mm. It is that impressive, but I don't know if I want to pay that much necessarily or sit with wrestling fans doing it, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess that's the thing that might be. It's cool if it, you know, you don't have the opportunity to go and see WrestleMania or whatever, and you're really locked into the product like that, and you know, seeing WrestleMania all day would be kind of cool. I could see doing it for a Mania. I don't know that I'd want to do it for any other, like I wouldn't just do it for some middle of
No. It's gonna be a Tiffany event, like a Rumble.
Yeah,
or a Mania.
It's gotta be like Rumble or Mania. Yeah,
I like doing Manias at home because they're now 2 days and too long, so it's like okay. Wrestling Observer and Fightful both recording Malakai Black may be done in AEW. That Will Ospreay promo, little brothering Buddy Murphy, Buddy Matthews, or whatever the hell his name is, may indicate that. New Japan had a lot of wrestling over the weekend that's now very ice cold in terms of takes, but Kenny Omega returning and beating Gabe Kidd, and the Young Bucks are now your IWGP World Tag Team Champions. On the main rosters of the WWE and whatnot, all your women's champions are different. Liv Morgan losing to Rhea Ripley, and Tiffany Stratton cashing in her Money in the Bank to be world champion over there, including Julia, now your NXT title. Oba Femi now holding your NXT title. I'm going to do this old news.
Well,
story
coming out of the New Japan thing that I think is worth noting is the Chris Charlton and Tony Schiavone.
Yes, I have that thing too. Okay. Here if you'd like me to talk about. Yes, Chris Charlton was suspended for 2 months for comments made during Wrestle Dream? I'm getting Wrestle Dream and Wrestle Dynasty mixed up.
It was Wrestle Dream. He wasn't on New Year's Dash.
Calling Tony Khan a money mark, who stole New Japan's top stars and did nothing with them. I have a lot of friends who think that this was Chris Charlton going rogue in a way, real, and that Rocky Romero was very upset by this and then suspended for 2 months because Rocky Romero is a executive with both New Japan and AEW. I did not listen to what the flagship had to say about this because I'm sure they'll have more insight.
My thought is that, like, at least I thought it was a work too. So I thought my initial read was Charlton was working because it was like so thick. But then my impression of seeing how the fallout went was he was working. It's part of a feud. But Charlton said some stuff that cut too close to the bone
for
a certain Marx Brothers looking executive at the other company. And
you did not just call him Harpo Marx.
I did.
Oh, God bless you, right in my face.
Yeah,
feels.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, so like a certain Marx Brothers looking executive did not handle that very well and had the reaction of, I don't like that. Because Tony Schiavone's reaction on Twitter, when I first heard that, like, oh, he'd like tweeted out, he'd like, he fired back, I'm like, okay, all right. Then I saw the actual thing and I was like, dude, you are in your 60s,
yes,
you idiot effing man child. What the F is this crap?
Like, I thought that was a, well, I had heard that Tony Khan had not originally watched it, but then was made aware of it. But that Rocky Romero was the one who was upset with it. But I was also told like a month ago that this pay-per-view, this joint pay-per-view, was going to be the start of a feud between New Japan and AEW. So I just assumed when I heard that, okay, there's Charlton throwing down the gauntlet. Because Chris Charlton is skinny as a pipe cleaner. You know, I don't think he can fight. I don't see him going rogue and going against wrestlers or whatnot, unless he was given that code red or whatnot. But I could see him possibly being a little bit too smart for his own good and saying some things that may have crossed the line to start the feud there. Now,
right. Yeah. But especially in the world of wrestling, where
yes,
things do get handled backstage, off camera, and
yes,
outside of eyes with no witnesses who will say nothing. The idea that Chris Charlton, a dweeb who looks like he still gets beaten up for his lunch money, would go rogue in a roster,
yes,
filled with Japanese,
yes,
dojo-trained,
yes,
wrestlers and expect no reprisal, and that he could just do this.
I don't buy that.
I don't either. I mean, that'd be iron balls. No one would ever have to say, Chris, when you're on the mic, don't do something like that, because I would know better that a Tomohiro Ishii might meet me in the parking lot and I'd hate my life.
And the 2 months thing is also confusing to me, because it's like, okay, Chris Charlton, I'm not his biggest fan. I don't think he brings enough to a broadcast to make me think, oh, we have to keep him on here because we can't use like Juicy Gambino or whatever as a color guy or whatever. You know, a month suspension, okay, 2 months, it's either because there's an event they want him to miss, or they just don't want to fire him, which to me it would be like, well, if he was really saying things that were that bad to somebody, they'd fire him versus a 2 month suspension. Like 1 month,
right,
seems to be, you know, that's a good round number. 2 months, you're kind of like going, well, what's the agenda behind 2 months then? I mean, what is... It's doubly bad than a double secret probation thing. The Schiavone thing, yeah, Schiavone gets in his feels on online a little bit too much for my liking at times. I also had the feeling that he was firing back as part of this quote unquote feud at first, and then it's like, well, he's on assignment, but that turned out to be a family thing more than this. So it was just one of those things where I'm just like, can we stop working the internet, please? Just did we learn nothing from Kevin Sullivan at all? Do not work the internet. It's dumb. There's no investment in it. But it kind of gets me to this last story, which is old and stale, but I wanted to bring it up with you anyways. In an interview with Tunnel Talk, which is a podcast, the Young Bucks said that the story for how they should drop the tag titles changed 4 or 5 times in the last several months before Tony Khan went with the idea of losing to Private Party. But they also talked about fooling fans that they were washed as wrestlers working boring matches with their EVP gimmicks. What we did, the EVP things, we were like, quote, let's just have really boring matches. Let's stop doing all the super athletic moves that get the big reactions. It is hard because one of the things in general is that most of our stuff is pretty exciting. It's high spots. Nicholas, I stopped doing dives for maybe 8 months. I didn't do a tumble out to the floor for about 8 months, and that was on purpose. We literally wanted people to think, are these guys not athletic anymore? Are they just boring wrestlers now? Matthew, one thing that really pissed me off was someone said, I thought the Young Bucks were washed, and I was thinking, oh, come on, you guys fell for the gimmick that we were doing. We didn't forget how to wrestle out of nowhere. Come on, don't be dumb. Now, this story was never relayed on television at all. They weren't doing the Mick Foley no longer being hardcore thing. And in the quote unquote sheets and in the thing, everybody was told that the Young Bucks were nursing injuries, and that's why they weren't possibly doing as many high spots. I don't get this at all. I think this is, I just go, they're so full of it. They're so in those meta bubble. If you're going to tell us a story that as your EVPs, you no longer want to be the entertaining Young Bucks, you have to do that as a stated gimmick on television so you get heat for it. I don't know anybody that said, man, the Young Bucks are doing really bad matches right now, Chris.
Yeah, ironically, I'm pretty sure that I praised a lot of the pacing in these matches.
They slowed down and they entertained us.
They got economical. They found better ways of utilizing their high spots for greater effect and everything. And I didn't, I guess, to their point, I have not had a boredom increase in the last several months watching them wrestle. It's, I would say, neutral to slightly positive. So I don't get that. But this is like part of this weird trend of wrestlers like Dwayne Johnson this week being bizarrely gotten to by some sort of dialogue that occurred on the internet and / or in their mind while the edibles were kicking in that they just felt the need to comment on.
That brings us to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever we had time for, we chose not to do a show last week because there was nothing on that AEW show that warranted us coming on. And Raw and NXT were kind of like heading towards this week as their big reveal. But we got to talk about Dwayne. I don't understand what the hell he's doing because he comes out on Raw and basically throws out the entire last year of storytelling that he did with Cody and Roman and the Bloodline and the Ulafala and whatnot. And he's hugging Cody at ringside and he's being corporate chill Dwayne. And he's not
telling us about Netflix
final boss. And he's doing the Netflix shilling and stuff like that. And pointing out, you know, look, there's Netflix executives you won't care about in thing. And then they plug him for NXT, which actually did end up selling out the remaining tickets for the Shrine Theater. And the whole story is not just he had nothing to do with the Eddie Thorpe beating, which I thought for sure was the way they were going, was that Ava, you know, says, oh, yeah, and Eddie put his hands on me. And then The Rock was the one going to be doing it. No, he literally does a story where I have nothing to say and Ava will go, you'll just figure it out there because the fans are different out there. And Rock goes out there, and sure enough, he has nothing to say. He has nothing to say to this NXT crowd other than support the people.
No. Also, don't you second guess what I'm doing. What I did on Monday was very clever, and you are very stupid for not thinking I am very smart. Wait. Really, really cool shit, Dwayne.
At least the parts you could hear that weren't getting bleeped out because for some reason Netflix has decided to enact language standards on this thing, I guess. I didn't realize that was a thing. I thought being on Netflix
meant funny.
They could swear.
I mean, so funny.
I was watching this going, look, I didn't, I'll talk about the Raw in a moment, but Dwayne, this to me feels like he's not going to be a maniac.
40 minutes of Dwayne this week. And he did negative
Negative. No, you're right.
No, it was negative. It was actually actively
against
negative.
Against the product is what it did. Like
in 5 hours, he got 40 minutes of time and he did damage.
He wasn't part of an angle. He wasn't, you know, it's one of these things where WWE already does nostalgia poorly to me because it's all about, look at these big stars, and they're much bigger than the stars we ever had.
Dude, that's why I love the Final Boss thing so much, is that like it was this fresh coat of paint on the Rock character. Yes. It was integrated into the universe. It was not, oh, he's still The Rock. It's a new, older iteration of this character. And it was definitively a heel, which is actually my favorite version of Dwayne Johnson. I always thought he was way more fun as a heel.
And he's probably going to put somebody over, which is the whole point of these legends coming in at time. It's not to give young guys the rub, per se. The young guy should already have the rub. It's one of those things where they come in to be the star at the expense of the young guy all the time. And it's just, I mean, like the Undertaker stuff with Rhea Ripley was the same way. Did we really need that? No, we didn't. I mean, Hogan.
That did nothing for her. Time. But like at the same time, then having Taker and Rhea talk doesn't do a ton for her. So the rub of the Undertaker, it would have been better used to have the Undertaker just talking backstage with Damian Priest about motorcycles.
I had an interesting experience watching this Netflix because I was using a VPN that was not the United States. So I never got commercials. I got the vignettes with like the New Day and the Miz and Karrion Kross. And it's a jarring experience watching it. Because there is no real downtime. There's a few video packages here and there. They still do the cut to commercial stuff. You never really feel like it's been interrupted. And it's a chore for me. It's a lot like those early AEW pay-per-views, to be honest with you, where it was just like 4 hours of just nonstop product. Here, eat this, keep eating it. Here's a mint, blow up, you know, the old Monty Python sketch. And look, I liked the Punk Rollins match. I thought the Rhea.
Rhea and Liv keep getting better chemistry. Liv Morgan, I think, has been a fantastic champion for this company and a fantastic star for this company. She's a real personality on this show.
Was there any Sky match on this show? Or there are only four matches. That's a weird thing.
Yeah, there were only four matches. My bigger issue with this card was just what we chose to put on this card and where we chose to put it on. Well, like, for example, I would have probably opened up with this women's titles match and made this entire show a big on-ramp for new fans to understand what the hell this Bloodline shit's all about. If you don't have a frame of reference for this Bloodline crap, and then it's all going to be these dudes fighting over a necklace.
Yes.
And you need to make this not about that. That this is a vaunted family in wrestling. That these people matter. Who are these people? What is the family tree thing that we saw last year. Would have seen that. I would have done vignettes throughout. I would have had The Rock come out, yes, to open the show, but to talk about the main event and have him be like the officer of ceremony or some like stupid title like that for the main event, to have everything really build up to this Roman Reigns versus Solo Sikoa thing.
Because you have to protect Solo. Because Solo is the power here, and that has to be about the power dynamic, and you have to make him seem important enough to beat Roman Reigns. And it became about the trinket. And it's like, oh God, it's fighting for the stick pony between Chavo Guerrero and Saturn or whatever, you know.
Right now you've turned it into
prop
comedy. It's not the stick pony, but like it is just a MacGuffin absent the story. Yeah. And if your presumption as WWE, which it was, is, oh, we're going to have a whole buttload of new people watching this product for the very first time. What is a better usage of that first 30 minutes? To mention on Netflix that you're on Netflix to the people who are watching you on Netflix? Or just going to throw out a contra example. That's item A. Mention on Netflix that you're on Netflix to the people on Netflix, or introduce people to this multi-year storyline that involves multiple generations of wrestlers that dad and grandpa might know, but also the kids might know, and there might need to be a little bit of crossover so that when dad sees Solo Sikoa, he's like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember the Wild Samoans. He does kind of look like Afa and Sika. That sort of thing. These things are useful.
Yeah, they played scared. Because it's very interesting what they didn't put on screen. Like Liv.
No, it was beyond scared. You know what this was, Jeff? This is reporting to work at your new job the first day with a t-shirt of your boss's face on it saying, "I love my effing boss."
Well, it was interesting in terms of what they cut, because I believe Rhea and Liv was originally going to be last woman standing. So that had to be cut for time. I believe that the Dakota Kai Lyra Valkyria match was supposed to be on this show, but it wasn't. And if you recall, this was going to be the debut of Penta with Rey Mysterio in a tag match that has now been pushed over.
It was Chad Gable.
No, Chad Gable.
Oh, this is you're right. Yeah.
Because Penta was going to debut in Los Angeles because Penta lives here in Los Angeles and is a luchador. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was very, I mean, it felt.
And that's a scary cynical move too. Right. It's really cynical. And I get being a little gun shy to put the rocket behind Penta, but if Penta's your big new acquisition and you want to make him the new character this year, I mean, it's really only a 1-year commitment anyways. This is a great opportunity to have him debut as this high-profile debut.
A big deal, yeah.
Yep, have him debut is a big deal, yeah.
Can't believe it. I have nothing else to say about Raw. I will let you choose whether we go to AEW or NXT, or if you want to stick around with Raw, we can stick.
I don't have a lot more else to say about Raw. I hated the sort of obsequious praise of the boss as I brought up here. I think it does nothing. We talked about Hulk Hogan already, but I mean, boy, that Hulk Hogan promo was fated to die in any building across the country with what was written on the page.
And it just kept going.
And it just kept, I mean, it was super pandering. Then we get to this beer that, like, people do not need another shitty Pilsner in their life. This is someone who doesn't drink anymore, but when I did drink, I enjoyed good Pilsners. That was actually one of my favorite types of brew back in the day. People don't need yet another shitty Pilsner. It's the dominant beer in America. So, like, Hogan, and also, I think people really have this resentment of, like, the Okie Doke commercial. Is the, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm seeing someone I like. No, actually, this is the way we do product sponsoring, so you can't go and use the bathroom right now.
Woo Energy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm about to see Bret Hart. No, you're about to see Bret Hart coming out to talk about, you know, his new co-sponsorship with Dr. Pepper. Oh, yes. That makes me so angry, Bret. Don't do it. Please never do that, Bret.
Out here to talk about my new acting gig on Canadian television.
Okay, but like, let's kick it over to NXT, shall we? Ava. Ava is canonically supposed to be a babyface GM, but if you are watching this product with any degree of vigilance and you care about balls and strikes at all on this show, she's doing such a better job as a heel GM who's like passive aggressively screwing people over than she is as a babyface GM. Let me recap this week's antics, just this week's antics, because there's several Ava bad GM moments on this. First, she has had friction with one of her employees. Her employee is Ethan Page, a former NXT champion here. How does she reassert her managerial authority over this employee with whom she has had friction and whom has shown to be a bit hard-headed and iron-willed at times? Why, she brings in her uncle to physically intimidate him. She's the baby face. She's the baby face here. And yes, uncle comes in and physically intimidates Ethan Page. But we're not done yet. We have a main event match, a title match, which has already been mired in controversy around general managerial choices made by Ava, somehow turning this into a triple threat match when at this point Trick Williams and Eddie Thorpe both have pinfalls over each other, and Eddie Thorpe actually has two visual pinfalls over Trick Williams, but you have Oba Femi in this number one contenders match. Oh, hey, we'll talk about how she manages number one contenderships here in a second, too. But first, we got to talk about this. Our number one contender, I guess, Oba Femi, decides that he's going to take out heel Eddie Thorpe. Heel Eddie Thorpe then comes to Ava, says that he was attacked by Obafemi. Her reaction to this is to do nothing. Do nothing to change anything. There is going to be no punitive measures for Obafemi, not even something to the effect of, Oba, you get to stay in the match, but should you win this match, you will be facing consequences for what you did leading into this match, which would be something that would make a ton of sense in a belt change. Oh, no, no, no. We're just going to screw over Eddie Thorpe, who misses half of this match because of the bad choices of Ava. He's not canonically physically able to compete for a large chunk of this match, but Ava don't care. She's a babyface GM. So then finally, let's talk about how she manages the number one contendership. Now, Jeff, you know that on this show, there was a number one contendership match for the North American title currently held by none other than Fallon Henley. Fallon Henley does compete on this pay-per-view. Normally, that wouldn't really matter because she's in a six-woman tag and we have a number one contendership match for a singles title, which gets decided in a non-controversial fashion. We have a winner. Her name is Stephanie Vaquerre. But Fallon Henley and her sequel to Toxic Attraction have actually a tag team match, a six-woman tag team match against three people, one of whom is Shotzi Blackheart, but we've now abbreviated her name down to Shotzi. Shotzi, after doing a senton that would make Jeff Hardy blush off of the top rope, procures a number one, or procures a pinfall over Fallon Henley in a six-woman tag match. Now, should this mean anything? Hell no, it shouldn't, because we have a number one contendership match on this show, which Stephanie Vaquerre wins. Stephanie Vaquerre's backstage, and she's talking with Ava afterwards, getting ready for this Fallon Henley match, and in walks Shotzi. And Shotzi's like, I think I have a credible right to the challenge for this title, not just in the future, but next. And Ava's like, huh, I have never considered such a position like this before.
No, the answer is both get a title match, but Stephanie goes first.
Right, right. You would get a match. You're the number two contender.
Yes.
You're the number two. But instead, Ava screws over the number one contender, yes, who's a babyface.
She's eventually going to be the women's champion in this company, Ava.
Ava should just make herself the double champion at this point, or Ava should be a heel manager. I would actually prefer greatly an out-of-control Nepo baby Ava, because I think it'd be much truer to life to the situation that I'm watching on my screen every week, which is someone who is not good at commanding the microphone or the visual presence of a GM, someone who is not contributing to the storylines, and someone who is a charisma vacuum who's only there because her uncle's The Rock. This is a heel GM through and through.
Let me jump in here, because there's not gonna be a lot of positive talk about AEW once we get there.
There's no positive talk for any of these shows this week. Did you think that title
temper.
Change on
Hold
NXT
on.
Was
Hold
good
on. let me temper Chris.
you calm your temper.
I enjoyed the first hour of NXT. I thought it was kind of brave that it was an all women's first hour. I'm not one of those people that, you know, give participation trophies for women's wrestling necessarily. I want to be entertained by women's wrestling. I thought Julia and Roxanne was pretty darn good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Agreed.
I thought the four-way was pretty good too. I really did. I thought everybody kind of played. I still watch as Kehlani Jordan is as a heel. I thought the six women was cromulent, because I think both JC and Fallon Henley are very, very good at what they do. I have no love for the Gigi Dolan crew over there. They do nothing for me. But
I feel so bad for Tatum, because I've been rooting for her constantly. I think she's extremely talented.
I think Tatum's better
burdened
than
Yeah. Oh yeah, and frankly, much better than her other two tag partners, who are the veterans of the team. Tatum has a lot more raw skill, and honestly has shown to be better at selling, and just a number of the other things. I think Gigi and Shotzi are both very tough human beings,
yes,
but very, very inconsistent wrestlers and not good storytellers.
And it still, every time I watch now, Stephanie Vaquer is the money. I like Julia. Don't get me wrong. I think Julia is a hell of a wrestler. But Stephanie Vaquer has personality that goes through with her wrestling and just with her character. She has it down pat in terms of she's engaged with whatever she's doing, even if it's in a second language, versus Julia, who seems to be processing things in English and then translating them either to Japanese or Italian when she's doing them. She kind of has this, she has that weird Io Sky disaffected look at times, which is a character choice on Io's part.
Right. It's strange with Julia where I wonder how much of it is language barrier. And then sometimes I think it is a Japanese wrestling sense of characterization that is inspired by things like anime, manga, that sort of stuff, that does not translate over to America because it comes off as weird, stilted, strange, aloof, like alien. Like I feel like Julia's reactions to stuff don't feel right. They don't feel like they quite fit into the thing that she's seeing.
Right. No, I would agree.
Yeah, you know, she sees a personal tragedy and she's sad, but like not like personal sad, like a different type of sad.
And
it's just off out of step. This would be a great test for Vaquer to see if she can carry this Julia Vaquer thing, because that seems to be where they want to go on NXT. They've been putting a lot of time into this. They both came in at the same time. Yeah. They've crossed paths a few times. It's going to be up to Vaquer to see if she can carry it.
I think this is how they get them away, because I think Vaquer and Fallon are going to now have their feud over here. So we'll see. And also, look, as a man who realizes that women are attractive, but they are half my age, Booker T needs to settle down with that Vaquer move on the mat and getting very aroused by it. It's off-putting. It turns off people I know who wanted to watch NXT and enjoy it. Were just given the ick by Booker T. The move where Vaquer drives the head into the mat.
Oh, God. It's not just that. I mean, it's the way he talks about Lola Vice.
That, too.
The way he talks about Lola distresses me. And then this is again coming from someone who thinks that Lola's extraordinarily attractive. It's you can acknowledge that and put it in an effing box and call the match and stay within the characters, dude.
Yes. God. She's very attractive, but she's very tough as well. You know, just do something like that, okay? Guys, you know, it's one of those things where it gives. Man, it's so weird with women's wrestling, and I feel for anybody who's involved in it, to be honest with you. I got nothing else. I thought the Obafemi Trick Williams match was too clever by half again, where
the image
comes in. It doesn't help Obafemi at all to win a championship on the basis of having an injured guy in there, even though he wasn't the guy that was pinned necessarily. It just was stupid, I thought.
So stupid. I mean, Eddie Thorpe has been completely unsympathetic, but feels like he has been screwed all the way down throughout the entirety of this program. Two visual pinfalls over Trick Williams. I mean, one with the ref bump where he gets like a 7 or 8 second count, the other one with the double shoulder down. So that's a ref counted pinfall over Trick Williams. He is kept out of the match. When he finally gets into the match, like, once again, we get like a banana peel Trick Williams finish, which is sort of like the legacy of his entire title reign. Once Ilya was not carrying this man, no one could. The shoulders of Ilya Dragunov are broad and mighty, and he should be remembered as perhaps this company's best champion, because he had great matches on his own right, and he tried his damnedest to hand it off to the next guy, and it just didn't happen.
And how you don't put Fraxium on an LA card that where you have the PWG types coming to your NXT show somewhat, and instead put, God bless him, I wanted him to do well, but Lexus King looks like modern-day Chris Jericho in there. And I couldn't unsee that. and all.
Just here's the thing.
Slow and plotting and just, what the hell am I watching right now?
I like Squish Body Lexus King. I think it works for this character. I don't know that that's what they want, and I think he needs to do something else, but I actually, I do. I think it works for him. I hate his character.
Okay.
I think the visual aesthetic actually of him being slightly out of shape works in service of the broader characterization.
Do you think that's a character choice?
I don't think it's a character choice. I don't know. I think he's out of shape. I'm saying it worked for the character for me.
AEW. The one thing I liked Jeff Jarrett and MJF because it felt pro wrestling to me. It felt like the start of a build of some sort. Everything else, I was just kind of meh. And sure, this was probably because I was suffering the aftermath of being in the emergency room. But the Casino Battle Royal.
That was so okay. The Casino Battle Royal was impenetrably stupid.
Gauntlet. The Casino Gauntlet.
Yeah, impenetrably stupid from the standpoint of the Undisputed Kingdom.
Well,
hell was their strategy in a one fault to the finish match?
Let me go even bigger than that, because this thing. Number one, you should just rename it the, if they were used properly, gauntlet match. Because everybody in this match, look, they loaded it up with guys that we're supposed to be excited for, but they've absolutely fumbled the ball on all the way through. We have a number one, we have the match, the triple threat last week for to see who be number one, who can guarantee that they might be able to get a pinfall, and we just bring out Hangman Page out as number two, as opposed to making that match, the other two can't compete in it. So it's really no use to do that. The Undisputed Kingdom, you know, triple threat was just, I mean, just, eh. You know, nothing really, but you know, Wheeler Yuta of the Death, or is the Death Riders.
Also, guys. Why the hell was he there?
He was there just to take out Jeff Jarrett. That's
no,
it.
I get that, but you, man, you gotta explain that shit. I'm sorry, you gotta explain the psychology of this match. That and that's the job of commentary, of which you had two play-by-play guys this week.
You had one play-by-play guy, and you had Ian Riccoboni. I don't like Ian Riccoboni.
Why I was actually going to say you had one play-by-play guy when you cobbled the two of them together.
Okay.
Daddy
Magic, who just brings nothing to Dynamite. He's fine on your B or C show, but he's terrible on this.
You can't expect him to save what is stories that haven't been told or stories that need to be told and that sort of thing. I hated this gauntlet match in particular.
Riccoboni got to rap, I thought, at least.
Yeah, well, thank God for that. And you know, he got to get roasted by MJF too. This gauntlet match was such a momentum suck, and I was unclear on the rules. So when it was decided by, because I guess I missed the rule announcement at the beginning of the thing because I was literally doing anything else, and I saw the finish and I was like, why was this person doing this? Why was this person doing this? What was the point of that? Why would he be doing this? No, it should be very clear with Yuta, for example, that Moxley has sent Yuta out there as a singular assassin to get rid of people. But his other job should be to try to get some schlub to win this. It should have been twofold, take out Jarrett and try to get whoever Moxley's
patsy
is.
There weren't any schlubs in this, though. That's
I know, and that's the other problem, right?
Well, unless you count Ricochet.
Well, or Yuta himself.
Yeah. Oh, God, the Ricochet. They're putting this dumb laugh in there. Hold on. We had the Murder Hawk Monster in there. He's kind of a... this got nobody over. Adam Cole has never been colder than in this entire thing. And he even looks tiny compared to Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong, who did nothing.
Everyone else in his faction makes him look small.
Yeah.
I don't do comparisons. I certainly don't know his body specs or whatever, but boy, it looks like he's lost mass over the last few years here.
And I hate the way they build, because There is no way in hell anybody thinks for a second that Powerhouse Hobbs is going to be John Moxley for this title. And I love Powerhouse Hobbs. I do.
Or if you're going to do that, right? And I don't believe he's going to win. But man, what should happen?
Stronger.
No. I think once he wins, what needs to happen is, one, he upsets Renee. But then at the end of the show here, he needs to basically manhandle the rest of Blackpool or of the Death Riders.
Yes. They're
like a guy like, and the Death Riders need to be sent scurrying with Yuta stuck in the ring, getting tortured by Powerhouse Hobbs, and Hobbs saying, "This is you next week, Moxley. This is you next week."
Oh, I would have done with Claudio even just to get it more.
Right. No, I would have had Claudio get level. Like, yeah, I don't know that I would have completely eviscerated Claudio that bad, but I definitely would have had him gotten taken out by Hobbs too with limited effort. But then I would have had him torturing Yuta. Maybe even handcuff Claudio and like basically turn the tables on the Death Riders, where now Moxley and Shafir have to watch as Claudio's handcuffed in the ring and Yuta's getting tormented.
Chris, I'm going to say one word. I'm going to let you go. Cope. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, so also somehow involved in the Moxleyverse storyline is a guy named Adam Copeland, who could have obviously could not continue to be Edge, and naming yourself Ledge or Dredge is not a great name, or Edger or Edged. None of these names
Cliff?
Are good. Yeah, right. Peak. Peak. None of these things are going to quite get you there.
Summit?
Yeah, right? Yeah, Adam Summit. He would have been better off. Let's be completely honest. Edge Copeland. Like, if
yes.
you can actually just hang on to this by calling him Edge Copeland and you're done. Or Adam Copeland, which everyone kind of at least knows him as, but we're doing Cope because Cope sounds like Edge. Ironically, though, if I recall, Edge once said that, like, a problem with his ring name, kind of like Christian, is that, like, it doesn't really lend itself to crowd chanting. Like, it has to be like a let's go, Edge, let's go, Edge. And you can't just go Edge, Edge, Edge.
So
Edge,
now it's going to be let's go, Cope, which is
Cope, Cope. Cope. Well,
we're trying to cope. We're trying.
Like, for the viewership of this show, maybe it serves as a soothing mantra.
Oh, Chris, be nice. I'm the mean one here when it comes to.
You know, we found out last year they're barely even listening to this show.
This is
no one on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network has ever, up until now, said anything particularly critical about the AEW product and the way that it's structured in a generalized way. I learned that last year, and that was exciting for me, being on the network and all.
We may have to do a crossover with Good Bad Hungy to argue. Although they've now turned on there are things wrong with this product, and you're like, wow, okay, even they can't do it. Although I think they came back around now that Kenny is back.
Does Kenny fix everything? Because boy,
I
get that the character's supposed to be older, wiser. Older did not necessarily come
out of the way. Let me get the positive out of the way. He was talking to the crowd and he was talking about needing the fans. And I was like, okay, that's a positive, but it's still best bout machine wrestling god, as you once called him, high-end premium Nick Nemeth, Dolph Ziggler, steal the show guy. And it's best wrestler, not guy who wins a lot.
Yeah, I put on the classics.
It's what the people who rate matches want, but it's not the people who watch wrestling want. I don't think people want, man, I am
he feels like the musician coming out in a way and touting his Pitchfork accolades that the All Music critics and the Pitchfork writers have always said that I consistently put out above average to great albums and that I've never missed. And the album sales do not belie this inherent sense of prima facie factualness, if you will.
Can I also be the person to say that I don't want him anywhere near the Don Callis family? Because I think that just drags him down, as opposed to the people who actually took him out, which were Jack Perry and the Elite, last I checked, were the guys who took out Kenny Omega and gave him that giant, you know, the diverticulitis or...
Well, and the relevant reason he would be back, too, would be in part to address the Moxley situation.
Yes.
So there's just this gets back to my longstanding, literally since day one of this title change, problem with the Moxleyverse, which is that there is no story here. And you can see the obvious perils of not having a story now, with the idea that there are like, I don't know, 6 to 7 guys who are all kind of after Moxley, but none of them have any clear or compelling necessarily
motivation.
Reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, and none of them make sense as the savior in whatever the hell this story is supposed to be.
It would be like bringing back Dusty Rhodes to feud with the Paul Jones army. Maybe not that low, because like, look, the Callis family has, with Kyle Fletcher, they have a star. And they do have some big guys in there, but it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, but they weren't the ones to take him out originally. It was these other guys. Well, we're just reintroducing him. It's like, no, for something like that, this needs to be a vendetta, and it needs to be the top thing coming back. Otherwise, he's not the star. That's the weird thing here to me. It's you know that Kenny Omega, everybody's like talking about, well, this is going to move ratings or whatnot. It's like, no, because they've introduced him into the secondary B story of the entire company as opposed to the A story of the company.
Well, and it would also have to be predicated on the idea that he's been a ratings draw. This is a guy that you can look to on a chart and say, that's a Kenny Omega week. And you can see 2 weeks before Kenny Omega, they were here. And then this week, they pop, I don't know, 300,000. Hey, what were the ratings this week, Jeff, for Dynamite? How many numbers did we do?
We did okay, but we can't do numbers anymore because of the streaming now. Because we don't know how many, because Max doesn't release its stuff. I mean.
Okay, so like the 615,000 might be a bit misleading.
I don't know if it was even 615, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I saw. That's what I saw when I Googled it here a minute ago.
What did NXT get?
Good question.
I thought it was close to 1 million, or so I thought, but maybe I'm wrong on that. According to the old WrestleNomics, I will vamp for you here.
This week, hey, here's my production assistant. As I said, I was gonna bring him back on as we got closer to the end of the show here. The people want to hear your version of Booker T. Booker T, the wrestling announcer from NXT, who you like, who's always talking to Vic. When we're watching NXT, there's like Vic, he's like the normal play-by-play guy, and then there's the guy who's like always yelling about Trick Williams or whatever. No, that's Michael Buffer. That's Michael Buffer. All right, we'll watch that.
Let's work on the bit.
We're gonna review this next week. Next week.
Okay.
Now that's what we call in the business a tease.
A tease.
See what you do. This is, I think, useful for AEW fans. What you do is you tease a week ahead that you're gonna do something, and then the following week you deliver on that storyline.
No, you announce it on social media two hours before the show, and you hope.
And then you just throw that shit on the show.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I got nothing. I got nothing else.
No, I like this is a down week. I mean, honestly, if we hadn't taken last week off, I would have been pushing to take this week off.
I was thinking about that. I was like, man, nothing happened. Maybe we should just wait till something happens.
I know.
6 months later.
The thought had crossed through my mind as I was watching that. I was like, do I have to do this? Can we punt another week?
We didn't even start till Mania this year. What's going on with Hawkins? Yeah. He's getting lazy in his old Hawkins cancer came back and killed him before they did another show.
Yeah.
Vader Club, an interesting pick from your wheelhouse, because it's usually me who picks the old wrestling, but you have selected Nick Bockwinkel versus Bruiser Brody from 1979 Houston Wrestling, Chris?
Yes. Nick Bockwinkle has to be of the pre-1980s wrestlers for me, with maybe like the exception of like Andre or whatever. He is my favorite wrestler of the early years. Okay. I think that Bockwinkle does so many things well. The promos are great. I love the promo going into the rematch that I was not able to find for this because I was going to just send that to you for shits and giggles. But I love at the end of his promo going into the match with Bruiser Brody, the way he says, "And I may even have to be more vicious," like in this absolutely mamby-pamby, wimpy-pants, like, "Oh yeah, you're so vicious, dude."
Using
especially
words like paradigm and stuff like that. Yeah, no, yes, I love all of that. Yeah.
I love his promos, but I love his selling. I think that Bockwinkle sells really great. I love his sense of match control.
Okay, before you go on, the thing for me, and I may have watched this match before, I've watched a lot of wrestling in my life, old and new. Every move that Brody did to Nick Bockwinkle, no matter how small, looked like it absolutely was quote-unquote real in terms of the reaction of, I just got my head driven into a turnbuckle, which doesn't hurt at all usually, but it looked like he got his head slammed into a wall, and that's how he reacted. I adored Nick Bockwinkle in this match. Please continue.
His selling is so excellent. And how old is he in this match, you might wonder? If you ask Google, you'll find out that he's in his early 30s. But if you use math, you'll discover that he's, in fact, 45 in incredible condition in this match. The other thing that I love as I was getting into is his sense of control. Because this match, though it goes to a classic AWA, schmozzy pants, dumbass finish, and it's the thing that I hate about old wrestling and always have and always will, but that's just the nature of the business back in those days. What's so great is that, like, when he's giving Brody absolute control, his sells are really good. But then when he goes on the offense, when he is, like, laying in, his offense looks good. It looks stiff. It looks purposeful. It does not look cocky or campy. And even when Brody's fighting back, Bockwinkle's still trying to fight on, but is just getting outclassed. I love the way that he knows how to just give enough, how to take enough, how to just sort of reset and reframe stuff. And to your point, everything Brody does for his part looks excellent. Brody's in excellent condition here. As I mentioned, his forearms, oh my God, the triceps, his triceps are just massive. There's a few times where he's doing holds and his triceps are bulging. And like, they look like they're just going to pop right out of his friggin' arm. It's awesome. And I like, you know, up until we start getting into the weirdness in this match, I really love the psychology between
these
two.
What weirdness are we talking about? But hold on, before we get into that, there's a couple of, you know.
Okay, a chair shot outside the ring that does not result in a disqualification. Yes. The year is 1979, and we still have over-the-top rope disqualification rules.
Yes, yes, we do. I love the over-the-top disqualification
rules. It's so
stupid. What anybody says. Two relics that were always kind of go away from 1980s wrestling, but here in the 70s, Boyd Pierce from Mid-South, your announcer, and he was a commentator on Mid-South, but also famed Texas referee Bronco Lubitsch.
Bronco! Great line in this. Great line. When he holds the belt over his head.
He's so strong. The announcer,
oh, the incredible strength of Bronco Lubitsch. I'm like, the man with the fastest three count in the West.
Oh, God. But you know, it's one of those things where, like, one move can give you a three count. And that was great, I thought. I loved the second fall where he kicks out at 3.5?
A 3.2, essentially, like, Brody makes the mistake. He makes a mistake, like a power man mistake, of rather than just turning his shoulder, he tries to do a full bench, and that gives Bockwinkle the extra tenth of a second.
People bag on that a lot. And I was like, no, that feels real. But my absolute favorite thing in here is the opening bit where they lock up and Brody shoves him away. And Bockwinkel accuses him of pulling the hair, and Bronco's having none of it. Number one, I love a good old-fashioned he pulled my hair ref from a heel. It's even better from a bald heel, which is why I always wanted Dax to do it when he was a heel on FTR, but he didn't take my suggestion. They lock up again, and he throws down Bockwinkel. Bockwinkel again accuses him of pulling the hair or whatever. Okay, fine. And Bronco's having none of it. Third time they lock up, Brody actually pulls his hair and takes him down. And I laughed. I had to pause. I was laughing so hard. And the baby face has just decided, you know what? You accuse me of this. I'm going to do it. Screw him. I howled.
Essentially, like, hoisted by his... I love the... Like, basically, Bockwinkel got outsmarted by his own bullshit. Like, right? So he's now set up the ref to think, oh, I'm just going to keep calling hair pulls because I've called wolf twice. It's basically the boy who cries wolf.
Yes.
Yeah. I've cried wolf twice, and now we do it. And then we, the audience, all delight over the heel who thought he was being clever, being outsmarted by his own clever scheme. Classic move. This is the stuff I love about a Bockwinkel match, and I just think it's timeless. I think in Bockwinkel, I see flashes of Henning's style of selling, but also Ric Flair's style of selling. Like, there's so many people who, whether they realize it or not, are channeling elements of the Bockwinkel performance in their bumping and in their thing. And they're some of the best wrestlers, and they're some of my favorites.
But really, like, I mean, if you want to get Nick Bockwinkel, watch the promos too, because yes, he's so fantastic.
They're so good. It's the nuance in his lines where he says something one way, but it has a drip of weakness. He says something one way, but it has a drip of disingenuousness.
And then Gene Okerlund will interject and he'll get pissed. Like, why are you mentioning anything right now? Pipsqueak, and I'll kick your ass. It's so great, the levels that he goes to in his promos.
Yeah, and even the class stuff, the way he uses class as a veneer.
Yes.
Yes, and prestige and stuff
as a
veneer.
It's like he's in a job that's
such a lost art.
It's like he's in a job that's beneath him.
Yeah, right. Like, it's the difference between Flair and Bockwinkel is massive to me, where it's like Flair is always like, well, this is the job that fits him. Like, this is, you know, like, being someone like Ric Flair, you should be champion. Bockwinkel's almost more, this is an annoying job that I have to do simply because best.
With Flair, it's about the money part of the class, where it's like, I get to buy all this cool stuff and live in this big house and swim in this giant pool and date all these beautiful women because I'm the champion and I'm the best wrestler. With Nick Bockwinkel, it's like, I'm the best wrestler. This was a way to make money. But I should have gone to Harvard.
Right.
And now I have
I shouldn't even have to defend this title anymore.
And now I have to deal with people that I wanted to leave this town and never see them again.
Right.
Just like
I shouldn't even really have to be defending this title.
Yeah.
Like, in a way, it's an insult to me to have to main event at this
I'm
next
I'm better
pay-per-view
than you people, because, and I'm better than the people who do this wrestling. Why
right.
I should be your champion by default.
Bruiser Brody is not on my level, and I don't know why you people, you dumb hicks, can't see that, like, this guy's not even a credible threat to me. I love that, man. I really do. Mm-hmm. There's just so much about Nick Bockwinkel that I enjoy, and as time wears on, I find more things I like about him. So, no, this is not the last appearance of Bockwinkel on Vader Club by any stretch.
No, and I'm going to give you a hint on my Vader Club pick for next week, because I've started gathering candidates, and it's going to be about someone who's retiring this year, the real final boss, Mako Satomura.
Ooh.
And let me tell you some things. There are some matches that I've been watching with Io Shirai, with Aja Kong. I'm trying to find one with Ayoko Hamada, but
what a career!
Oh, and there's one with, and there's a few with Kana, aka Asuka, that are just absolute bangers.
Yeah.
So it will probably be Mako Satomura. I'll get that to you as soon as I can.
Absolute legend. Yeah. As we are getting to the finish line, we're taking a step back. God, man, Mako.
I missed
I stand
so much
in absolute
of her career.
Awe. I know, and it's only by catching up and obviously having a reviewer when we were doing it in like NXT UK and stuff.
Yes.
You just saw, holy shit, she's
so good.
She's so good.
And she's so crisp, and everything hurts, and it's great.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll
it's
get
great.
To that next week. We'll save
Can't
it for next
wait.
Week.
Looking forward to it.
This has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I also do a show on the Fight Game Media Network called The Dynamite Show with Paul Fontaine. Comes on to YouTube about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air, drops in your audio feeds for free. The next day, we go thoroughly through AEW Dynamite. Chris is only on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. He also teaches music lessons and has other plugs to do, so I'm going to let him do it now because I need to get out of here.
Yeah, no, I do too. I actually got to get all into work here. By all means, please, if you are looking for guitar lessons, music lessons, piano, bass, drums, all of these things can be proctored on the interwebs. I'm pretty decent at them. Some people say, other people say I'm horrible at it, but they stink and I hate them. So if you're interested in those music lessons, please hit me up on Instagram. It is DOCTOR_NOV. Dr. Nov is my name. Oh, my name is Christopher Brino. I am on Spotify. Feel free to check out some of my music. And that's all I got for plugs this week. I got 7 cats in this house. I got to get all the way to work. And that's all I got to say about that.
And I have a bladder to empty. I'll talk to you all later. Bye.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It's the new year. Time to make a positive change in your life.
I went to My Computer Career because I needed job security.
Because I wanted a career in cybersecurity.
I went to My Computer Career because IT jobs are everywhere.
My old job was going nowhere.
I went because I didn't want college loans for the rest of my life.
Because I wanted a career for the rest of my life.
Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. Financial aid available for qualified students, including the GI Bill. 529 college savings plans accepted. Not available in Washington State.